Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm joined today by an illustrator, educator, comics artist, and author of the new graphic novel, Odessa. Jonathan Hill, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we are currently in the midst of the annual Portland Book Festival, and you're participating in a number of events. This year's festival is dramatically different from previous year's events.
Yeah, I mean, just like everything else, it's gone completely virtual. I had my event with Kiku Hughes on Saturday, and yeah, the theme was aftershocks, and it was pairing sort of the dystopian past and then sort of the dystopian future of my book in YA.
Yeah, it's interesting that the book festival is normally a day-long event, and now it's a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I also serve on the board of directors for Literary Arts, and you know, Amanda Bullock and Liz Olofsson are in charge of kind of running the book festival. And I think Literary Arts has had to pivot, just like everywhere else, of just having to move remotely. And I think something that I just really appreciate when they think about how they're having to adapt and how they have to change is looking at opportunities instead of just trying to sort of cram in what was the one day of the book festival. Let's try to cram it into an online event in one day, but looking at like, well, we won't run any events concurrently so that people could experience every single event. We'll record them. We have a wider audience that we can reach, and just trying to get as many authors and creators involved. And so I think, I don't want to speak for Amanda. I don't want to speak for Liz or anyone that ran it, but I think they really was just looking at, you know, how things have changed and how we can take advantage of that.
Well, your being on the board of Literary Arts is a testament to the fact that ever since its beginnings as the Wordstock Festival, the Portland Book Festival has always embraced comics and graphic novels.
Yeah, I think one of my first big events was actually at the Book Fest. This would have been 2011, or it was Wordstock at the time, obviously, and it was the convention center. And I think I did an event for my first book, Americus, and I was there with Vera Brosgel. Anya's Ghost had just come out that year, and we did a talk together. So yeah, I've been involved on and off. You know, that was the first thing I did with Wordstock, and then I think it went dormant for a little bit, and then Literary Arts sort of took over and turned it into the Book Fest. And then I've kind of been involved every year since then, since Literary Arts took it over.
Well, this is a good time to mention, you collaborated with M.K. Reed, she's another Portland comics creator, on two books, Americus and Wild Weather. So tell us a little bit about those projects and your working relationship. I know it was definitely an evolving thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, with Americus, I mean, if anyone has heard me talk about it before, you know, we were kind of connected through Greg Means, who semi-runs Tugboat Press anymore. I don't think he really has published anything in a really long time, but he used to publish Paper Cutter, which is probably the best comics anthology, I think, that's ever been printed, because he just did such a good job of getting established cartoonists and new voices and stuff. But MK and I had never worked together. And I think if you read through Americus, you can actually see that relationship growing. I think if you look specifically at the first chapter of Americus, the layouts are not, I'm very particular and very intentional about my layouts and my storytelling. And MK is very good at like dialogue, but the thing is you have a lot of dialogue. There's not a lot of space for the artist to sort of play. And so I think in that first chapter, it was me trying to really fit her stuff into a space. And, you know, I think as the book goes, we sort of learn what it took to work with each other. And the metaphor I always use is it's like if you were to dance with a stranger, you're going to be stepping on their feet. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be clunky. But the more that you do it, the more in sync you're going to get. And it's a really great thing to be able to work with someone and sort of like trust them, trust that the best interest of the book and the story are there, and that we're just doing what we can to make it the best that it can be. That was a lot of fun. It was a big deal to have that be my first book. You know, at first I was kind of unsure about working with somebody else, but I was eventually just like, well, I'm not drawing my own book now, so I might as well do it. And I learned so much. Honestly, I think the biggest thing I learned from those first two books with MK is like learning to let go Because I think when you work on your own, you can be very particular and you can fuss with it until it's perfect. But when you're working with somebody else, you kind of have to give a little bit to get it done. And I think that was really helpful for me in just learning to just like let go, get the pages done and move forward, because that's the most important thing.
So let's talk about Odessa. This is your first solo graphic novel, and the title Odessa refers to a certain person, a character in the book.
Yeah, so it's the book is about three siblings searching for their estranged mother across the ruins of America, and their mother's name is Odessa. And it sort of starts off where the oldest sibling, Virginia, gets a package from their mother, and they don't know if she's been dead or alive. They haven't heard from her in years. And this sort of spurs this adventure and her sort of taking the initiative to try to risk leaving everything that she knows behind, you know, just for that chance to find her mother.
Well, you mentioned the protagonist. Her name is Virginia Crane. Ginny, as her family calls her, is a 17-year-old girl. And the Cranes are a Vietnamese American family living in Portland. So, you know, obviously you're drawing on some of your own cultural experience there.
Yeah, I think I actually just last week I did a blog post for We Need Diverse Books, and it sort of talks about the, you know, they were sending out galleys and everything, and against everyone's advice and my better judgment, I would look at Goodreads and see, you know, what people were saying, and there were some reviews that were like a one-star review, and I could take it, but they were like, it's Vietnamese American, but that doesn't play into the plot at all. And it was actually, that was really upsetting for me. I don't mind getting a one-star review. I know that, you know, everybody has their own taste and you'll get whatever you get from the story. But I think I really took offense to that sort of idea. And there were other reviews that had sort of come up similar to that, that there's just this idea of that to be Vietnamese American, they're heritage or their culture had to tie into it. I think the fact that people were saying that shows how much we need diversity in media, because they're Vietnamese American because I'm Vietnamese American. And I was raised in, you know, the more of the dominant culture. I'm mixed. My mother's Vietnamese. My dad is American, and I grew up American. But I mean, it's beating a dead horse at this point to say that, you know, who were the options I had in representation in media? Short Round, Long Duk Dong, that sort of stuff. Like that's, you know, it's a sidekick or it's a farce. And I didn't have anybody to look up to. You know, I know before the interview started, we talked about Big Trouble in Little China. That was the most important movie for me growing up, because I loved that it sort of inverted the tropes there, and that Jack Burton he's sort of the sidekick, and it's really Wang Chi who's the main character. He's the one who's, you know, fiance has been kidnapped. He's the one that's competent. He's the one. And Jack Burton is sort of like this fumbling sort of goofball who he thinks he's the main character. And I think it was huge for me when I was a kid growing up with that movie. And so I just, with them being Vietnamese American, I just wanted them to be able to be like, that they could be the heroes of the story. They could be the protagonists. It doesn't have to tie into the Vietnam War or immigration or that cultural heritage. I want some kid who's Vietnamese American to be able to pick up a book and just read it. And then I also want other people to just read a book and see that, like, oh, here's the main character, and they don't have to be a straight white dude, you know?
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, again, the protagonist of Odessa, Virginia Crane. So you're a guy, and you're writing across gender lines. That must have been a challenge at some point for you.
You know, I thought about this, and I wonder, you know, because you also, like, I wonder, like, what, I think at a time when we're trying to be very conscientious of, like, who gets to tell whose story, like, is it my place to, like, write a 16-year-old girl or a 17-year-old girl? But I think ultimately, you know, as a creative, I think I'm just sort of a comics engineer. I'm a story engineer. I look at problem solving. I come up with plot things. Those create problems. I have to solve those problems. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, Virginia is a 16-year-old girl, but I also think that really she's just the character Virginia Crane. And I think the choice to make her a girl was a couple reasons. I think that one of the reasons is I feel like on a level of having a mother have left, having the oldest sibling be the daughter, who was the one who was oldest and had the strongest connection and is forced into sort of a matriarchal role against her will or unknowingly just because of the survival of this world and with the mother leaving, I felt like that created a little bit of a stronger connection. And like what it's like to have to take care of people, have to have your childhood sort of taken as you had to become more responsible, that sort of thing. So that's how I tried to treat her. And I hope that people can read about her character and just have her feel real and not really care if she's a girl or a boy or binary or, you know, whatever. Like, just like, I think that she exists kind of just as a character.
In Odessa, the end of the world in the story comes about because of the big one, a massive earthquake along the West Coast. And as the story unfolds, we find that the earthquake isn't the only thing that's brought down civilization.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I don't know if I want to be too spoilery, but essentially there's a supernatural element to it that kind of comes in later.
It's a little bit sci-fi, yeah.
I think it was intentionally a little bit of a slow burn. It's funny because I think my editor, Robin, she had read the pitch and she had wanted to work on it. And I think when I was sending her pages or thumbnails for her to kind of check over to make sure everything's okay. I think she'd forgotten that there was that element to it. And it was interesting to have her reading it as I was turning pages in and just sort of being like, thinking it was, oh, it's the big one. But then there ended up being the supernatural element. It kind of took her by surprise. And so I kind of hope that it just unfolds in that same way for the reader too, is that, you know, you think it's just sort of the big one that we talk about, that we read about, all that sort of thing. But I wanted there to be something a little bit different to it.
Well, there's definitely some allegorical elements. I mean, one of the things that people worry about these days is that we've been weakening the structures of our civilization so that one big push could just topple things.
And I think it's funny because as I was working on this book, I had a former student, Zan Drake. They were art assistant. So they helped me do things like just like reletter it in Illustrator, kind of prep it for print so that I wouldn't have to do that, so I could keep working pages. And Zan is great. Shout out to Zan. But what I really appreciate about them is we were talking about it once and they were like, I don't know if this is intentional, but I noticed this theme in the book that sort of has come up and it really resonated with them. And that, I mean, it's playing to a lot of apocalyptic story tropes, like it's ruthless, it's violent, there's gangs or different factions that are sort of vying for power and position. But then they're also like, at the beginning, the story starts out and it's like they're in Portland and it's more like a community and it's homesteaded and it's sort of sheltered from the outside, from California, essentially. And, you know, it's just violence and violence. And that's the rule of law, right? It's like you survive. That's the only thing that matters. And Virginia and her brothers sort of butt up against that. And I think there are some conflicts within them, with even the siblings amongst that. But, you know, Zan just really appreciated that there's this idea of all these grownups are saying, like, this is the rule of California. This is the rule of the straight. It's kill or be killed. And the kids are like, but it doesn't have to be like that. And, you know, just this idea of these structures that are in place that we think are, and I think this is what's been happening the last, 8 months now, 9 months, of like, we're seeing that these systems, like, they're actually really bad systems. They're kind of a facade and they're in place because that's the way they are. And so, you know, what it must be like, you know, because I teach at the college level, I teach youth too, but to just be handed this world that grownups are just like, it's horrible. It's over. We don't care. We burnt it. We've raised it. We took what we wanted, but now you're going to inherit it and there's no other way to live. What is that like? That's really, it's horrible for us to be doing that. And so what it must be like for a teenager or a 20-year-old or college student to be handed that and be like, well, those ways don't have to be that. That's not the way you have to do it. And so I don't even think that was something I was kind of conscious of, but it was something that I was like, oh yeah, that, like, it was kind of cool to hear that sort of interpretation of some of the story.
Yeah, we've been seeing so many young people that have stepped forward. I mean, the Parkland High School kids, Malala Yousafzai and Greta Thunberg. There's this kind of almost mythical moment that we're in right now with these young people stepping up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I love working with youth. I love working with my students. And just to see them tell stories and see them tell their stories, I just get excited to read good comics. And again, there's an activism amongst them because they're handed this husk of a world that, you know, they're going to have to live off of. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And so I just, yeah, I think it's great.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm talking today with Jonathan Hill. He's an illustrator, educator, comics artist, and author of the graphic novel, Odessa. So, Jonathan, would you like to do a reading from Odessa?
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I think I have a scene here that might work out pretty well. This scene sort of starts off as Virginia pulls out sort of the letter and the photo that her mother has sent her, but it kind of spurs all of the book, really. And off panel, we have TK. So let me ask you something. You don't know if your mother is in San Francisco, but you hope to find her there? Virginia responds, well, we have an uncle there and she lived with them a long time ago. We thought she might still be with him. And TK asks, but you know she's alive? And Virginia says, I got some posts from her on my birthday. Unfortunately, it doesn't say where it came from. TK says, is that what you have there? Virginia holds up the photo. Yeah, she sent an old picture of me when I was a kid. Could I see it? Sure. You were a cute kid. Thanks. Your brothers have her nose. Yeah, I got stuck with our dads. Your kids, so they're, there's a quiet pause as they both look at the fire. They died during the earthquakes. Well, one of them did. The eldest survived, but had an accident a year later. I tried to save them, but it made things worse, much worse. It would have been better if they passed with their sister. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. No, it's fine. It's in the past. I've made my peace. Do you remember that day? Virginia says, you mean the earthquakes? Of course. I was about Harry's age. It seemed like the ground would never stop shaking. And TK says, yep, it was worse down here in California. Some of the shaking you felt was the earth tearing itself open and forming the strait. The world ended, right? But it didn't. We're still here. Things never end. They just change. And that's the end of the section.
I'm reminded of a comic that you created for the Believer magazine. You wrote about your mother and your uncle, their escape from Vietnam. That's a four-page comic where you're really kind of grappling with your Vietnamese American heritage, and you're portraying yourself as a kid who's not appreciating all of the things that your mom who's escaped Vietnam and brought this culture with her. There's a bit of regret in some of those comics for the way you reacted to some of the overtures that she gave to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up, you don't want to be different, right? You want to fit in. And I grew up kind of all over the world. I spent most of my adolescence, you know, my youth, probably up until about seventh grade in Missouri and Colorado. I'm surrounded by white kids. I don't want to be different. I don't want to be the person that, you know, and I think that I speak to this in the comic, is that amongst whites and the dominant culture, I stand out because I look different, but I grew up the same way that they grew up. But then if I'm amongst Vietnamese, I don't speak the language. I'm half white. I'm not Vietnamese enough. We mostly grew up mostly American culture. There were some Vietnamese things that we had growing up, but sometimes there'd be food that'd be too weird or sick of eating. You know, I remember when the rest of my family came over from Vietnam and they were all living with us in this small house. Well, I mean, it was actually a pretty big house, but, you know, just this huge family. And, you know, we had to eat Vietnamese food every day, or like we might have pizza, but then we'd have to eat rice and this other stuff. And, you know, I'm just like, God, I'm sick of eating rice. I'm sick of having rice all the time. And, you know, you just don't appreciate it because you're, I mean, you know, when we're kids, we're just totally absorbed in ourselves. And it's not until I grow up. And I mean, that whole comic is growing up and being like, what does it mean to be Vietnamese American? Like, I wish, you know, I wish I could connect more with that. I wish I would have paid attention. You know, I didn't grow up, my mom obviously speaks Vietnamese. She teaches Vietnamese language at UCSD. My dad spoke fluent Vietnamese, but we didn't grow up speaking Vietnamese. You know, I wish that I would have pushed for that more. I wish, but as a kid, like, you know, you don't care. You just want to like, you just want to eat pizza and watch TV and like hang out with your friends. You don't have an appreciation for that. You know, so that's, I mean, that's what that comic is about, is that comic is about that sort of, it's a love letter to that, that regret, I guess, is what it was.
As an adult, did you ever get a chance to visit Vietnam?
Yeah, you know, we went a couple of years, actually, I guess it was 10 years ago. We went, and we were cheating a little bit because we did go with my mom. So we didn't have to learn the language or anything because she just served as a translator. And it was great to see, you know, because there is a big part of my family history in there, not just for my mom, but my dad. He was in Vietnam since before the war. And he was there up until the end. He was on one of the last helicopters out. And so he was there for a very, very long time. And so that was probably his favorite place in the world. And so it was really intense to go and have my mom. I'm really glad that we got to go with her and have her show us, this is this place from our youth. This is this place, for, you know, your dad worked here, et cetera, et cetera. It was a really, really great experience.
And just to make the cultural mix more interesting, you ended up spending your teenage years in Kuwait.
I did. My dad's company, they were a contractor for the Army. So we moved around like Army brats without being Army brats. Those kids are horrible. But so we moved around every 4 years. And so, yeah, in the middle of my seventh grade year, we moved from Rolla, Missouri, which is right in the middle of Missouri. We moved to Kuwait and I spent all of high school there.
How soon after the first Gulf War were you in Kuwait? I'm wondering what effect you kind of sensed from
Yeah,
that.
You know, so I think we were there like 3 years later. And, you know, I remember when the Gulf War was happening and I remember watching on the news sort of the missile strikes. And I remember seeing the Kuwaiti families sort of hiding and hunkering. And I remember, you know, I think I was old enough at that point that I was just like, that seems like the scariest thing ever. And that sort of stuck with me. And then I remember when my dad was like, all right, we're moving overseas. We're going to Kuwait. I was just like, oh my God, that like, what? But you couldn't even tell basically that there was a war. There were some buildings that they left, I think as sort of like memorials to what happened, but you, for day-to-day life, you couldn't even tell that there was a war there.
And did you get to travel around the region a bit?
Yeah, we did. We had, what was it called? Like Mediterranean Activities Conference. So like you would go to, you know, Cairo for basketball, or you'd go to Dubai for a basketball tournament or things like that. Like our model, I know that kids here have MUN, Model United Nations, and that's a joke because when we went, we would go to The Hague for MUN, like the actual Hague. But I didn't do sports. I basically did, we had a fine arts festival, and so I would travel there. So we did some traveling around. When I moved away to go to college, my brothers and my dad did a lot of traveling through Asia and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's just a huge opportunity, right? To just see a different part of the world and just experience a different part of the world.
Well, I want to make sure I avoid spoiling anything, but at the end of Odessa, it says to be continued. How long should readers expect to wait till the story is continued?
Yeah, that is another question I get a lot. It's on the back burner right now. When I was working on Odessa, and now I signed a 2-book deal with Candlewick, with Walker, and they're taking very, very good care of me. And so those books are kind of what are in front of me. But Odessa, you know, it's not a series, it's 2 books. I have the ending, you know, the next book, it's been plotted out. The middle is a little murky, but I have the end. I'm really proud of the ending I have, and I'm really excited for it. It'll at least be a couple of years, but it's a story I want to finish. And I'm just really proud of where it is in my head. Hopefully it'll be as good as I want it. But, you know, I just have some things that are kind of on my plate right now.
Well, is there anything else on the horizon that you're comfortable talking about?
I'm super excited for these books for Walker that I'm doing. I get to work with Susan Van Meter, who is an amazing editor. And the next one will probably come out 2022, so in 2 years. And that is called True Tales of a Seventh Grade Lizard Boy. You know, it's a middle reader book, and it's sort of taking, this book is going to be taking the trope of sort of the lizard people and kind of paralleling it with sort of the immigrant experience. And what it's like to have to sort of like wear a new mask, wear a new face, and sort of exist, you know, in a world that kind of sees you in a very, very specific way. So I did the second draft of that. I'm waiting to get edits back, and I should be drawing it soon. You know, books take a long time, but that's sort of the next project, and it'll be a couple of years from now, but I'm super excited for that.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and my guest today has been Jonathan Hill. He's an illustrator, educator, comics artist, and author of the graphic novel, Odessa. Jonathan, it's been a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you so much. It's been so great being here. And, you know, I was talking about a book being apocalyptic in an apocalyptic world, but it seems like there's a little hope in the future. And I think that that's a big thing to look forward to.
Well, on that note... For our listeners who might be interested in your various projects, how can they find out more?
Oh, you can find me at basically one of the Johns everywhere. It's O-N-E-O-F-T-H-E-J-O-H-N-S. There is no H in my name, but there is in all my handles. So oneofthejohns.com, Twitter, Instagram, one of the Johns. Yeah, you should be able to find me there.
And how about literary arts and the Portland Book Festival?
Yes, I mean, the book festival is going on until the 21st. They have something for everyone. And I love the way Amanda picks panels and pairs authors together. It's free. It's open to the public. Portland Book Fest. I think it's pdacbookfest.org, literaryarts-arts.org. It's supposed to be, if you miss a panel or you can't see it because you're doing something, they are recording them. And I'm sure that they'll be up soon.
Well, thanks again. And thanks also to our listeners on the radio dial and at kboo.fm. And a very special thanks to Ken Jones for his expert work engineering today's program. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture.
I want to reach the western lands, rise in front of you across the bubbling brook. It's a frozen sewer. It's known as the Doohad, remember? All the filth and horror, fear, hate, disease, and death of human history flows between you and the western land. How long does it take a man to learn that he does not and cannot want what he wants? You have to be in hell to see heaven. Glimpses from the land of the dead. Flashes of serene, timeless joy. A joy as old as suffering and despair.